Good afternoon. This program is Live and Local. It's your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. And we've got three performances, well, technically four, to talk about. Coming up later on in the hour, playing live in our studio, we will have Karen DeBush, who's clarinetist, but best known to many folks in Champaign and especially Urbana as the band director at Urbana Middle School. She's giving a recital as part of a series from the Urbana Pops Orchestra, principal players, and having some of her students join us on the program today, so we'll be hearing them live in our studio. Also coming up this half hour, a member of the Australian Ten Tenors on Broadway, who are bringing their show to Peoria tonight and Springfield tomorrow. But first, a conversation with soprano Julia Bullock, who is the 2012 winner of the Young Concert Artists competition. She and pianist Renata Rolling will be giving a recital at the Krannert Center in Urbana this coming Sunday. Here's Julia Bullock in a live performance at the Marlborough Festival of Music by Ernest Chausson. That's music by Ernest Chausson from his Chanson Perpetuelle, featuring the soprano Julia Bullock, who is the winner in 2012 of the Young Concert Artists International competition. And in that capacity, she's coming to the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana for a recital Sunday afternoon. And she's my guest this portion of Live and Local. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Tell me a little bit about this particular competition, the Young Concert Artists. We've had other winners of that on the program and certainly performing at the Krannert Center, but just a refresher on how that happens.
Sure. They hold auditions in the fall, and then it's a three-round competition. But for me, the amazing thing about it, they're not trying to fulfill a certain amount of people on their roster. They pretty much just take whomever Susan Wadsworth and the panel find interesting. And they're just looking to help promote young artists that they feel have whatever sort of future, I guess, in music.
I'm looking at the program of music that you'll be singing Sunday, and it's incredibly varied and very interesting. And what makes it a little even more interesting to me is that I wasn't able, at least in our collection, to find much of anything that's on it, which at least suggests to me that you're finding music that the average singer doesn't do, and you're putting it together in a really interesting way. Why don't you tell us a little bit, rather than my describing the program, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you put this particular program together, and what was your, assuming you had an overall vision, what was that?
Vision, yeah. Well, let's see. I guess I should start with Susan Wadsworth had some requirements, I guess, for me. She wanted me to sing Messiah on the program because Resurrection is essentially, I think, the piece that impressed her the most, but I think touched her the most in the UICA competition. So I had to find a way to work a group of Messiah songs in there. And also there's a piece on the program by David Hertzberg that was commissioned by YCA. And that's by David Hertzberg. He's 23, really, really gifted American composer. And he loves Wallace Stevens poetry, and actually so do I. So that was, it's been really nice working with him on that so intimately. And then the first half of the program, I thought, okay, I want something that's going to ground my voice. And my pianist said, well, have you thought about Berio? And it's famous for this lick, la li da li da li la li la la la. And I thought, oh, no, I can't actually get my tongue to move that fast. No way. I can't sing those songs. I just worked on it for about 6 months. And the day that I could do my la li ras, I said, okay, let's do it, and a group of Italian songs.
And that's Luciano Berio, who just died about 10
right.
years ago.
Right.
What is that? La 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 la. I can't do it. What is that? A particular piece, or just a technique
it's
he uses
last,
a lot?
It's the last song in Ballo, which is dance. It's just a fiery song about love, and saying that essentially the everyone who was once wise or had any thoughts at all, when swept up by love, turns into a complete fool. And it's like casting a spell or something. It's just a wild song. But the first half of the program is I can't say really has a theme of any sort. But the second half, I actually had been thinking about it for over a year, and the Josephine. So it opens with this set of Josephine Baker songs that I had commissioned by a close friend of mine, Jeremy Siskind. And I've been wanting to sing Josephine Baker songs, the songs that Josephine Baker sang, for about 7 years, actually. So he resurfaced in my life, and I thought, oh, this is a really good time to get these songs transcribed and arranged. Then that goes into... I stay on stage the whole time for the second half. The last song in the Baker set is Si J'étais Blanche, which, if only I were white, and the last line she says, would you like me better if I were white? And then it goes immediately into Renaissance by Mont Sauvage, which the opening song of that is about a woman who, a black woman in a white dress, is being watched by all these sailors, and them sort of wanting to keep her, and they keep saying, "Oh, que blanco, que blanco." And I don't know how much people are going to link the blanche with the blanco, but for me, it's a fluid way to move into this next set of songs, sort of about objectifying not just black people, but also women in particular. And then goes into a song about an intense and violent night with a man, and where she's at the end, she's cut by her white lover, and then she's impregnated, and she sings this beautiful, beautiful lullaby to her little black baby, and then that goes into Brown Baby, that I first heard an arrangement that Nina Simone did of that song, so from Negrito to her Brown Baby, and then moving on through the rest of the program from there.
Well, it seems really, really well and interestingly constructed. The first set, Rossini and Berio, of course, both Italian,
yeah.
And then Messiaen, who is not, or Herzberg, for that matter. I wanted to play for our audiences one of the pieces you mentioned from the Monsavace set. Criolla passa con suo mirigno che blanco, che blanco. O la risponde tua espuma, marine rosso contemplata, la moja di te de lunas che le hace in su piel lunata. Niña, no te quejes, tan solo por esta escape de pronto de la cárcel de tu falda, tu cuerpo encierra esta tarde rumor de abrirse de Dalia. Niña, no te quejes, tu cuerpo de fruta está dormido en fresco brocado, tu cintura vibra fina con la nobleza de un látigo. Il quella alegre alico non si ananco. Los marineros te miran y se te quedan mirando. La niña criolla pasa con su mirigno que blanco, que it's Victoria de los Angeles singing in place for the moment. We're representing Julia Bullock, who's my guest. This portion live and local, she's going to be singing at the Krannert Center in Urbana Sunday afternoon. That's music by Xavier Monsavace from his Cinco Canciones Negras. This one called Punto de Habanera, sung by Victoria de los Angeles. It'll be sung along with two others of those five songs in a recital Saturday afternoon at the Krannert Center in Urbana by Julia Bullock, the 2012 winner of the Young Concert Artists International auditions. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is your interest and pleasure, it seems, in working with contemporary composers about creating songs for you. How much has that figured so far? In your career?
Well, I guess in the first time I ever had that done was in I went to Bard before I attended Juilliard, Bard's graduate vocal arts program, and that's run by Dawn Upshaw. She's the artistic director, and with Kaya Wiwama. And they, every other year, they have a perform, that's in collaboration with Carnegie Hall, or at least it was my year, it was in collaboration with Carnegie. And we met with composers, and they composed these chamber works for us. And yeah, so that was my first time ever working with a composer that was writing for my voice. And it's always it's interesting to see how a composer, well, based on what they think that they hear, how they're going to write for you, and the extremes that they can take your voice. I mean, I know every time I receive a new score, I think, oh no, I'm not going to be able to. I'm not going to be able to find the vocalism for that. But I don't know, if you're working with someone who's really, really quite brilliant and imaginative, it can help really unlock a lot of cool things that you never thought were there. So at least in the piece with David Hertzberg, with the Wallace Stevens poems, my range goes from a high C to an F sharp below the staff, which is, I mean, I've never sung that in public before, that kind of extremes in range, but it's, I think it works, actually. It's pretty exciting.
And was Jeremy Siskind, in making these arrangements of the Josephine Baker songs, was he able to do some of the same, really tailor those arrangements to your voice?
Well, no, I mean, I think I asked him to listen to the orchestral arrangements of her pieces, and then we've spent a few hours, a few sessions together, just kind of trimming here and there. I mean, her voice actually was this very light sort of coloratura sound, and I think she and I have some vocal things in common. So no, not so much in there.
So in that case, you're sort of impersonating Josephine Baker.
In some sections of it, yeah, for sure. She definitely has inspired the vocalism for that.
Well, it's a wonderful program, and I think people will really enjoy hearing a fine, flexible voice performing such a variety of music. It's going to be Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Kranert Center in Urbana, soprano Julia Bullock. And your pianist is, does she say it, Renata Rolfing?
Renata Rolfing, yeah.
Renata Rolfing. So she'll be joining you for that, for the duration. And if you want information on how to get tickets and so on, it's KranertCenter.com. Thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our broadcast is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, a Norrison preferred dealer at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. Coming up, live in our studio, Karen DeBush on clarinet and some of her colleagues from her the school where she's band director, Urbana Middle School, and actually the high school there as well. And next, a member of the 10 Tenors who will be in Peoria and Springfield this weekend.
Can anybody find me somebody to I just can't get no relief.
me down. They say I'm going crazy. They say I got a lot of water in my brain. I got no common sense. I got nobody left to believe. Got no feel. I got no rhythm. I just keep losing my beat. I'm okay. I'm alright. Get out of this prison cell. One day I'm gonna be free, Lord.
Find me somebody to love. Find me somebody to love.
Find, oh, find
me somebody to love. Find me somebody to love. Find me somebody to love.
Can you find me?
Somebody to love. Somebody to love,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Somebody to love, oh,
somebody,
somebody to love, somebody to love,
a song performed by Queen, most famously, and performed here by a group out of Australia called the Ten Tenors, who are going to be performing twice in our area, tonight at the Peoria Civic Center at 7:30, and then tomorrow night at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield for a show that starts at 8 o'clock. The Ten Tenors been around about 15 or so years right now, and one of the ten is with me on the phone. He's also happens to be their tour music coordinator, Paul Gelsomini. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Was I right, about 15 years the group's been around?
Yeah, that's correct. It's been about, it's probably past 15 years now. What started as a simple idea for some boys to make some beer money has turned into something a little bit more serious.
Yeah, literally true. They at the time were all in college together.
Yeah, they were all in music school together, and it was seriously that. It was let's get a little bit more money on the side just to have a few more drinks and have a good time, and it just escalated.
Well, I read that the average age of the group is about 26, so I'm guessing that none of the original members are still there.
Correct. Yeah, no, up until last year, David Kidd was probably the last lone survivor of that group. He had toured for that full time, which was pretty amazing. So I was lucky enough to be on tour with him, and just the amount of knowledge and experience that man had was unbelievable.
What's your experience? What's your musical background, and then how did you find yourself among the Ten Tenors?
Sure. So I started at the conservatorium in Melbourne at Monash University, doing music performance, majoring in voice, classical voice. And I finished that degree. I took about 4 years, and then did a bit of study abroad at the Puccini Festival in Tuscany, in Italy, which was amazing.
And I assume that's an operatic festival?
Yes, yep, in the town where Giacomo Puccini was born. Mm. So it's a beautiful festival they put on there in a gorgeous cathedral. It's breathtaking. And I was lucky enough to be invited just to, be a part of it, and it was, stunning. So after that, came home, did a little bit more study, and then auditioned for the Ten Tenors, and now I find myself 3 years later here, touring this beautiful country of America for the first time.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. Hope
you're enjoying it.
I'm loving it.
Do most of the guys in the group consider themselves opera singers first and other types of singers second?
That's an interesting question. I would say that the current lineup at the moment, and given that we're doing a Broadway show, there's a mix of voices. So that's the beauty of having 10 voices on stage, is that we are not all classical. Some of us are more music theatre trained, some are even a little bit of pop, and that gives us the versatility to cover such genres and such types of artists. you know, I think without that in the mix, it becomes all a little bit, the sound has the potential to become a little bit the same. But yeah, that's probably one of the things I love most about our group, is the versatility.
Is that one of the ways in which the group has evolved? I mean, was it more strictly operatic at the start?
I think the idea was it started very much like that. Yes, we are 10 tenors, we're singing tenor repertoire. And now it's sort of turned into, okay, we're 10 guys that we also like to have a bit of a dance on stage. It's something that, you know, if there's an idea that's come up in the creative team, you know, it won't be dismissed as easy, I guess, because, you know, things do grow, things do evolve, our audiences evolve, you know, just the type of sound is not always, I'm sure if you listen to an album recorded from the first 10 tenors to now, it's a very different sound as well. So, but we do like to keep it fresh.
Why do you need 10?
I knew you were going to ask that.
Because, of course, this whole tenor thing, I started with three tenors, with Plácido Domingo, Luciano Pavarotti, and José Carreras, for those who don't happen to remember that.
Yeah, well, they are the greats, aren't they? I think in every if you ask every guy in the group, they'll tell you that that's one of their favorite tenors, or amongst their favorite tenors, spawns from one of those three of the originals. But I don't know why 10. 10's a good number. 10 is strength in numbers. It's very strong on stage, I guess. It's good to, you know, it's even great to be on the road with 9 other blokes. You know, if you get a bit sick of one of them, you got 8 others to go and chill out with.
How are there ever actually 10 parts for you to sing?
I think the biggest split is probably in something like Somebody to Love,
mm-hmm.
Where there would be about 6, 7, yeah, I think about 7 or 8 even parts. So it's, yeah, but I don't think we've ever done a 10 split.
We started out with, before this conversation, with a song from Queen, Somebody to Love, which of course would have featured Freddie Mercury and the recordings and the performances, and then the rest of the group in their famously operatic vocals. And we're going to hear something from Les Miserables in just a moment. I wonder if, when doing the arrangements and choosing whoever's going to sing the solo part, when there is a solo part, if you have in mind really trying to recreate the sound of the original performers or whoever made it particularly famous, in that case, Freddie Mercury.
I'd have to say no. I'd have to say that, because that ultimately comes down to my job, where I have to allocate who sings what. And my instinct is to always go with, because I know all the voices and each unique strength, you always try and find a timeline within the song that would work. And 85-90% of the time, it's pretty smack on. But it can be a difficult thing, because everyone can interpret music so well and so differently. So there's not necessarily a way that is right or wrong. It's just, yeah. But in answer to your question, no, I try not to go off the original. I just try and go off an idea that I see working on stage, and you know, most of the time they do. So,
well, in the case of our next tune, as I hear it, it's a pretty faithful recreation of the song, musically anyway.
Musically, oh, okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and you know, maybe or maybe not. So many different voices have sung the character of Jean Valjean.
Oh yeah,
which is who would sing it in this. Tune. Paul Gelsomini is the tour music coordinator and one of the 10 tenors who are touring their On Broadway show. It'll be in our area twice between today and tomorrow. Tonight's at the Peoria Civic Center at 7:30. Tomorrow night at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield at 8 o'clock. And for more information on the group, I think it's just 10tenors.com, is it?
That's the one. Yep, the 10tenors.com.
Thanks very much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
God. like the song I might have known.
Like
if God had granted me a son, the summer.
From Les Misérables, of course, Bring Him Home, sung by Jean Valjean in the musical and sung by the 10 tenors. I don't know the name of the tenor who was primarily featured on that one, but certainly one of the 10. And we talked with another of the 10 this portion of our show in advance of their performances tonight in Peoria and tomorrow night in Springfield. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's music heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring new exhibits entitled On the Road Again, Cruising Coast to Coast with America's Music. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. Our final performance is going to be taking place Sunday afternoon at Urbana Free Library from 2 to 3. It is the second in a series of what will be 5 recitals by principals or other members of the Urbana Pops Orchestra, which has been going for some years now. The orchestra has, but not the recital series. This is their first time for this. We had Nathaniel Geiger, who is a student at Illinois State University on trombone, was here last month, and performing for the first time in public in something close to 30 years, she says. Karen DeBush, who is a band director at Urbana Middle School and also a clarinetist, and has brought with her 3 of her clarinet students who will be performing on the program as well. And they are Henry Ando, Hannah King, Cecilia Brown, and coming up in a little bit also we'll have pianist Jeremy House. Thanks to all of you for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
So if it's really been that long, why not perpetuate the silence?
I felt like the whole idea of the Urbana Pops is to perpetuate education. And one of the best things I can do is model for my students what I hope for them to be doing. And so I took the challenge on. And I've loved every minute of doing it. It's
but
been fun.
A little nerve-wracking at the same
Just
time?
Just a lot, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Do all 3 of the students you brought with you, are they take private lessons from
They do.
From
them? I've had each of them since about 4th grade, actually. They all 3 started before the official band starts in 5th grade. And I've known them for quite a long time now, yeah.
A little bit of your background. I peeked at your it's really the shortest possible resume on the school district website, I think, and where the degrees came from. But music always in your life, I assume?
Yeah, I grew. My parents, my family is not musical at all. But I went to a high school, and I had a wonderful high school band director and a junior high band director that really encouraged me, and I loved it, and wanted to be a high school band director. Then I went to Luther College, and I decided there was no way I wanted to teach. And
Music education usually prepares you to teach.
Right, and so I went on to grad school to teach at the college level, and so I went to Missouri. And then I came here to the University of Illinois and never dreamt I'd stay here this long.
But in both cases, you were majoring in clarinet performance.
Right, yes, yes.
But that wasn't what you thought you would do, be a professional performer on the clarinet.
No. I love playing, and I really wanted to teach at a small college where I could have the best of both worlds, playing some local orchestras. And I got really, I became really fortunate when I walked into the Urbana School District. I started there as an aide, and I found out that I loved teaching, and that was the right place for me.
What were you teaching as an aide?
Also, I was helping with chorus and doing the department programs. I was just after I was done with my coursework for the DMA and needed to support myself, as most musicians do for a time, and ended up realizing I loved teaching. And was fortunate enough to get a job in the district. And it's the only place I've ever been.
Always, I mean, once past the aid portion experience.
I was on the first fine arts team they created in Urbana for 1 year. And then I moved on to instrumental music, and I did a variety of things. And I've been there. This is my 24th year now as a teacher.
Fantastic. Well, I have to say that, and I hope I'm not misremembering here, but as some of our listeners know, and all of you guys know, I have conducted the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra for 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So close to what you've been doing. And I've had an awful lot of really fine clarinetists, and I think all of the best ones have been your students.
Oh, thank you. I am so fortunate to be in this community. We have just wonderful people in this community. And one of the good fortunes is the wonderful students I teach, both not privately, but you know, also in school. I've just been very fortunate to have kids who work, who care about what they do, and my hope is that I instill a love of music with the students I teach.
Not every band director, in fact, I'd guess that most do not teach private lessons of any kind.
That's probably a smart thing to do, actually. I have found that helping my students in this way helps our program overall. The kids, there's a better relationship with the kids. I keep in touch with many of them throughout the years after they grow up, and there's a big investment in their learning, and I love the fact that I'm able to invest in that part of their lives.
Do you teach privately anything other than clarinet?
I do a few flute lessons, but mostly clarinet. There's a lot of great flute players in our area, so.
Yeah, who do teaching.
Yeah.
Well, your recital Sunday afternoon will have some solo pieces by you, but also quantity of ensemble pieces for this quartet you got.
Yeah, I decided because this is sponsored by the Urbana Pops, and as I took it on, I thought about who I am as a musician today, and I do a lot of playing at my church, St. Matthew Lutheran, and we have lots of wonderful musicians there, and and one of the things I do the most is teach. And I thought the best educational way I can do it is to do a variety of things that would keep people interested. A typical recital wouldn't be any fun for my typical sixth grader. They would probably be pretty bored in 10 minutes. So I tried to integrate things that would be different. For example, a piece with handbells. And it's really neat. The quartets. And, of course, we have a birthday quartet because Hannah's birthday is on Sunday.
Oh, really?
She's 18 on Sunday, yeah.
Congratulations in advance.
She's not there yet, don't worry. And then I do this Amazing Grace that I've done at my church many, many times and at a place I go in the summer. And it's a wonderful jazzy piece that Richard Stoltzman has done an arrangement of. And then I'm doing a piece that talks about the history of the clarinet. And it is somewhat, would you guys say it's humorous?
Mm-hmm. I'd say it's entirely humorous.
Yeah. It's kind of a take. It talks about reeds. It talks about the history of the clarinet. It puts me in a position that I'm a little uncomfortable with, being a little bit of an actor. So they got to preview it the other night. And It's kind of fun.
So you don't feel you have to act as a director at all? As a band
I
director?
Act every minute I'm teaching, actually. No, you act every class you have because you have to adjust to the kids who are in your room. And, yeah, absolutely. I've had to change a lot as a person, being a teacher, for sure.
Now we might explore that coming up. But let's hear at least one of the quartets you brought along. What are we going to listen to?
This is called Candid Clarinets. And it's a piece by David Bennett. And we read it one day and they fell in love with it. So I said, okay, let's do it. So we're going to do it for you.
Karen DeBush with three of her students, Henry Ando, Hannah King, Cecilia Brown, in advance of their recital Sunday afternoon. They're live on Live and Local. Fun piece. Nicely done.
Thank you.
David Bennett, Candid Clarinets. That's an interesting piece. It's sort of got a mix of a bunch of different styles in it, it seems
like. It really does. Yeah, it does. But it's fun and lively and...
A little bit nostalgic, particularly in the middle somehow or another.
I think this was published It's very old.
Well, if it is very old, that would probably explain that.
Well, and I think David Bennett did a lot of writing for, like, band. Mm. So he must have been a clarinet player.
Mm. And Karen DeBush, the lead clarinetist in this quartet, she's also band director at Urbana Middle School, where the other three clarinetists with us have all been students, right? Mm-hmm. Hannah King, Cecilia Brown, Henry Ando, and they're all private students of hers as well on the clarinet. I'm curious from any of the other three of you if there are favorite stories that wouldn't embarrass Ms. DeBush too much that tend to make the rounds of things that have happened in band, you know, either when you were there or when you weren't there.
That's a really good question.
Well, I thought so.
I think,
do you have an answer?
It's basically all one really good story. It's just comical all the way through.
What, being in her band is comical?
No. Okay. I've talked myself into a corner.
Pretty much. The microphone is open.
All right. Well, I can tell a very recent story. Just last weekend, Ms. DeBush and I went to see her old teacher who used to teach her at Illinois and now is at Indiana.
Howard Kluge.
And when she played for him, and he was just glowing about her. And I was like, wow, it is so weird to see Ms. DeBush being taught. But, you know, it was a really cool experience because I got to see, he said so many of the things to her that she says to me. It felt like watching us two from the outside.
That's a neat analogy. I like that. Mm-hmm.
So a nice example of how one teacher hands down to another, who hands down to another, and maybe Henry someday you'll be teaching some of the same things.
I would hope to.
Hannah, surely you've got something from band.
Oh, there have been so many just instances. None particular come to mind at the moment. It's all one big story, like Henry said.
Is band with Ms. DeBush fun?
Oh yeah. It's always fun, definitely. She bribes us with cookies, of course, with sometimes donuts and
to do what?
To for good rehearsals, incentive, we'll say. Mm.
But we don't do this all the time.
I wouldn't be able
to afford to live.
It's rare, but it's effective for sure.
Yeah, because you never know. One day. You may come in, and if you have a good rehearsal, you'll get cookies, and so it keeps you on the best behavior.
Well, I guess everybody needs a motivation.
Yeah. Yes.
It doesn't happen often, trust me.
You mentioned, Karen, that you've had to change.
Oh, desperately a lot.
As a director. In what ways have you seen yourself change as a person?
I used to be really shy, and when I tell people that, they look at me like I'm crazy. I've had to learn to come out of my shell and be aggressive and learn how to stand up for what I believe in with adults and kids. Kids are a lot easier than adults, of course. But I've learned that if I teach with a passion that I really believe is there and set examples for the kids, I model a lot in class. It just has really helped me kind of grow up into an adult. It's been one of the best things that ever happened to me.
So the acting out on the podium is acting for a while, but after a while it just became you.
It becomes who I am, yes. Yes. Sure does.
We have, I think you said you have a piece that you've done with some regularity, an arrangement of Amazing Grace.
I do, yeah. One of the places I'm really active is my church. I've known Cecilia since she was a baby. Her mother, I used to play organ at St. Matthew, which Jeremy does now. And Cecilia's mom used to bring her upstairs, carrying her to come hear me. So we've known each other for many, many years. And I remember one day she came in. I won't say what instrument because that will get me in trouble with people. But she came in saying she was playing an instrument. And I said, that's really nice. And I almost cried because it wasn't a band instrument. And
it wasn't clarinet.
And it wasn't clarinet. And I don't really make all my kids play clarinet by any means. But but I just remember going, that's wonderful. But the next year she came to clarinet. So.
Yeah.
And it was a good switch for her.
It was a very good switch.
Yeah, because everybody's got their own instrument. Her sister plays a brass instrument, by the way. So,
a fine family of instruments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. So Jeremy is the organist at our church now, and we'll do a little taste of it.
Jeremy House, who's not going to be the pianist on this particular recital.
He'll be playing with the bell piece we're doing.
Oh, you will? Okay, good. Yeah. Who is the pianist for the other pieces on the show?
Sam Ginger, who just won the Cranert debut competition.
Oh, fantastic. He's been in the studio a couple of times.
Yeah. So he plays for our Saturday night. And, you know, I just felt like it'd be really cool to bring in all aspects that are part of this community and part of what I do in music. So
a bit of Amazing Grace. Yeah. Karen Bush.
And this is a Stoltzman arrangement.
Richard Stoltzman. Fine clarinetist himself.
Very fine. Oh, we're going to try that again. Do you want two verses?
Sure.
Okay, sorry. Read dried out. Okay.
Please do that.
I hate it. That's part of the lecture.
It's the biggest part of the lecture.
Oh, in the piece that explains the history of the clarinet?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It just went dried out on me. This is embarrassing. Okay, right? I'll do it first.
First couple of verses from Richard Stoltzman's arrangements of Amazing Grace. Karen DeBush with Jeremy House. That complete piece, of course, will be on the recital Sunday afternoon from 2 to 3 at the Urbana Free Library on West Green Street. It's the second in a series of recitals by principal members of the Urbana Pops Orchestra. And the next one coming up will be exactly a month from then on Sunday, March 9th, which will be a flute recital, and I'm sure we'll have a feature on that here as well. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation. Our final piece will be one that we have on recording, but it's with the appropriate performers.
Right.
The performers will be on Sunday.
It is with Daniel Reich, who has done an arrangement of this, and with Sam Ginger and myself. And Daniel does an amazing job with, it's a bell tree, and it's just kind of a magical piece. I really like it.
By a fellow named Kevin McChesney.
Handbells, yeah.
I must know it for some other reason, unless I know another Kevin McChesney. and it's called a Toccata. Well, thanks to all of you for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
It's been a pleasure to hear you. And best of luck with your re-debut as a recitalist, Karen. Should be a lot of fun for you and for your students to hear and of course, for all in the audience. It's a free program, by the way. Don't know that I mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Toccata by Kevin McChesney here on Live and Local. Thank you. Music by Kevin McChesney called a toccata for clarinet Beltre and piano, the clarinetist Karen DeBush and her colleagues who will be performing that piece and more on Sunday afternoon from 2 to 3 at Urbana Free Library. This is 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.